Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
To put it kindly, Georgia has had its own issues to deal with over the last few days in the aftermath of losing to Alabama, so we haven't had a ton of time around here, unfortunately, to mock the misfortune of some of Georgia's rivals. We will do that today, though, a little bit, because it is actually relevant for a couple of big Georgia recruiting stories. At least I believe it might be relevant for a couple of the big Georgia recruiting stories that are unfolding before our eyes, and even the possibility that Georgia could be on commit watch later on this evening. By now, you know that Auburn has become a little bit of a tire fire as of late. They were lucky to beat Arkansas, lost to South Carolina, got obliterated by Georgia, and it seems like much the same way every fall, there's the ushering in of pumpkin spice latte season and the leaves start changing colors. There's also a period of time around right now where it seems like Auburn has gotten tired of Gus Malzahn. Like, how many times have we kind of sort of approached the fall and had this narrative pop up? And much like Christmas, it seems like it comes earlier and earlier every single year. Well, we have reached the portion of the 2020 calendar, even in the midst of coronavirus and everything else. Still, there is still time to have the Auburn grown tired of Gus Malzahn season, but this time it may be serious. This time they may mean it on the heels of some bad losses and really an ugly performance against South Carolina on Saturday. Let me give you just a quick taste of this. And as I said before, this isn't just mocking Auburn. This is also relevant for a couple of Georgia recruiting storylines, which I will kind of lay out in their entirety here coming up in just a moment. So Paul Feinbaum, kind of a voice of the SEC, you would think maybe a little bit of a finger on the pulse of how things are going in the league. He makes an appearance each week on WJOX, which is a big sports radio station in Birmingham, Alabama. And on the subject of Gus Malzahn this week, well, he kind of laid out what the current scenario is with key Auburn boosters and their very expensive yet mediocre coach, Malzahn. This is Paul Feinbaum.
The short-term question about the long-term stability of Auburn remains the same. And, you know, is there someone there who is going to change the direction? And I mean, I'm not talking about the athletic director, because we hear the same thing out of athletic directors at Auburn. I mean, can we all agree that the athletic director does not call the shot or will not call the shot? So it's a problem, and there's no getting around it. And I've been pretty steadfast in my support of, hey, Malzahn's done this and Malzahn's done that, and the buyout's too much. I'm sure you've already heard it, and we'll hear it all day. But the Auburn family is growing very weary.
So the Auburn family is growing weary with Gus Malzahn. I have to put, when I make the audio clips, I have to put dates on the clips so I'll remember when they originated in case I ever want to use them again. I feel like that if I went back through my audio file archives, Auburn family tired of Gus Malzahn, I feel like I've probably got that same clip from Paul Feinbaum over the course of a number of years. But the point, though, is this year may truly be different. Now, I honestly don't think that Auburn can afford to buy out Gus Malzahn. We gave you the rumor earlier in the week of Auburn busing back from road games because it can't afford to fly right now. So, listen, if they're taking a Greyhound bus back from Oxford, Mississippi or Columbia, South Carolina, they may not be able to afford the $20-plus million buyout for Malzahn, approaching $30 million if you get to the, you know, in the entirety of assistant coaches. Auburn may just not have enough money to do what it wants to do right now. That's entirely possible. However, and this is the one thing I do say all the time, that when it comes to a weariness, when it comes to a problem with the program, recruits are always the first to know. And this is one of those things where, like, no matter how much the media hypes something up, the recruits are closer. They are invited to the inside of a program. They are allowed to see the inner working. And sometimes they will validate the inner workings and say, this is a program I want to be a part of because I've seen what's happening behind the scenes. And sometimes they'll be kind of repelled by that. I think that one of the ways in which you can kind of know that what Feinbaum is saying about Malzahn there, that it might be true whether Auburn can afford to buy him out or not, is the fact the recruits themselves seem to notice this. Watch all the dominoes that have fallen in the recent days involving recruiting battles where Auburn was a factor Georgia was a factor too, and we had been told that Auburn might actually have the edge over some of that kind of stuff. Let me mention five-star linebacker Smile Mondon. How many times have you been told over the course of the last few weeks, last couple of months, that Auburn was a real player in Mondon's recruitment? And if anything, Auburn may have the lead over Georgia. We were told that for quite some time. Well, now here we are this week. I'll show you this on Twitter, that Smile Mondon is now ready to make his announcement on November 18th. And he's got a list of finalists that include Georgia and Auburn and Florida and LSU. He's getting ready to make his decision. And all of a sudden, Auburn as the key player in the Mondon news here, maybe that's not quite so true anymore. Let me show you this from Keith Niebuhr, who covers Auburn recruiting for 24/7 Sports. He's a good recruiter. He wrote a story this week. It's free. You can read it for yourself online. That when it comes to the Mondon recruitment, Niebuhr writes that it feels as though Georgia is trending some at the moment. Now, the professional term for what Niebuhr is doing there is letting them down easy. That's what you describe that as, when the recruiting guru from a particular fan base has to go online and say, this one may not be working out quite so much for Auburn right now. It certainly seems like, if you want to kind of connect the dots here, that the problems of Auburn, the lack of full trust that people have in Gus Malzahn may have hurt him with a linebacker like Smile Mondon. It is certainly at least a possibility. But then there is this. On this Thursday, we're broadcasting the show live coming up tonight. There's a chance that Georgia could be on commit watch. Three-star cornerback Kamari Laster, we told you about this yesterday. He has let it be known. We'll show you his announcement on Twitter here. He has let it be known that he is getting set to make his commitment at his school there in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. He encourages everyone to wear their mask who shows up for the ceremony. So it's a dignified and cautious young man. You certainly like that. And last night on Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, our own recruiting insider Jeff Sintel kind of handicapped the race for Laster at the moment. And once again, Jeff points out that this could be another head-to-head win in recruiting for Georgia over Auburn. Take a listen to this.
Kamari Lassiter is out of American Christian in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. He also has a final group of schools, but Kamari certainly seems like to me that his decision is down to Georgia Tech, Clemson, Auburn, and Georgia. Kamari Lassiter is a three-star corner, but he's one of those guys that I feel very confident in saying that he would be one of those guys that would, if he got re-rated in the current cycle, if he got some evaluation camps or showcases, he would clearly earn his four-star. Because look at those schools that were involved: Clemson, Georgia, Auburn, Georgia, and DBs. He's very long. He's a playmaker on offense. Kamari Lassiter is actually a Georgia native from the Savannah area as well. So even though he is in the state of Alabama, and Auburn is on him hard, that's a guy that I think Georgia has a really good shot with.
So Auburn on him hard, but Jeff says Georgia still has a really good shot with him. We'll find out later on tonight how that goes. Could be another example of on-field problems for Auburn creeping in the 2021 class. And as so many times has been true, when Auburn has issues, Georgia stands to benefit from that when it comes to the 2021 recruiting cycle. By the way, when it comes to Laster, if you haven't fully familiarized yourself with him, you probably should. I think what Jeff says there is probably true. And yes, I know every time SEC school brings in a three-star recruit, there's always the narrative of, well, he's actually really probably more of a four-star recruit. But in Laster's case, that may end up being true. He's got the requisite height and, you know, body, you know, characteristics, things like that. Maybe he just hasn't been fully evaluated yet by the recruiting industry. But Laster seems like a pretty good prospect. If Georgia earns his commitment tonight, I would say it's a pretty sizable win for Georgia and its 2021 class, and it's potentially another head-to-head win versus Auburn, maybe providing a preview for what might go down in November with Smile Mondon and everything else there as well. The bottom line is, after Georgia lost to Alabama, it's probably not the time for any of us to be mocking any of the other SEC rivals at the moment, but in this case, problems in Auburn could be relevant for Georgia as it tries to start hoarding talent here for the class of 2021 and keeping that talent edge over teams like Auburn as high as it's been. It seems like we're in the midst of watching that about to unfold. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us, no matter how you get to us today. And a big thanks to our friends at Meriwether and Tharp for making it all possible. You can watch us on video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, listen to us podcast style, Apple, Google, Spotify, posting the show at theworldfamousdognation.com. We love our radio partners in Athens on 960 The Ref. And as I said before, none of this would be possible today without our friends at Meriwether and Tharp. One of the things that I love hearing from our audience, people who have actually used the services of our sponsors. Meriwether and Tharp is one of those organizations that I've heard about that some of you have said, hey, listen, I was facing a tough decision. I was a little concerned. I actually wasn't sure if I even wanted to go through with this, because the honest truth is, if your relationship can be saved, you should try to find a way to do that. But I knew I needed to start the conversation. And then one of the things I've heard with so many people is, hey, Meriwether and Tharp has kind of walked me through that step by step, just checking in, letting me know that they're there for me, and letting me know that they'll be ready to go at any point in time that I'm ready, but also providing advice leading up to all of that. I love feeling good about the recommendations that I make on this show. When I hear those personal testimonies coming back from you, I know that we're saying the right thing when we say, trust our friends at Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com. They will work for you tirelessly to make you whole again if you find yourself dealing with a divorce. TheAtlantaDivorceTeam.com. That'll get you in touch with Meriwether and Tharp. All right, busy for us. It is Terrence Edwards coming up in just a moment. We'll talk to him about the aftermath of the Alabama game on Saturday and where Georgia goes from there. Before that, though, Around the Doghouse here today, delivered by Marco's Pizza. And I want to go back to yesterday's show for a moment, because I thought it was very interesting on Tuesday when Kirby Smart was kind of pressed on the medical clearance of JT Daniels and exactly what that meant. What I said on yesterday's show is, if you listen closely to Smart in those comments from Tuesday, one of the things that you don't hear him saying a lot is anything related to medical stuff. It seems like Smart kind of sidestepped the idea of that when he spoke on Tuesday. Let me let you hear a brief audio clip, and then I want to take that to some new information from Smart here coming just later on in the week. This is Kirby from Tuesday.
Well, medically cleared is saying that he can go out and get tackled and play football. It's unique to that position because you don't, the quarterback doesn't go live. I mean, maybe in fall camp some, but he doesn't go live until real game time. And then, everything else is revolved around who we think gives us the best chance to win. And that's ultimately the decision you have. Toughest thing is getting enough reps once you're down the road of being able to get guys prepared for game. You can't prepare 3 and 4 quarterbacks to play in a game. You just don't get enough time to do that.
So what I said on yesterday's show is, if you listen carefully to Smart right there, you don't hear him saying anything about health. You hear him speaking about Daniels in terms of a readiness to play. It's important, though, to provide a key update on this, because when Smart spoke on this topic again on Wednesday, all of a sudden health was thrust back into the conversation again. Smart speaking as a part of the SEC coaches teleconference, something that happens every Wednesday. Dog Nation had coverage of this yesterday. Here is the new latest quote from Kirby Smart on JT Daniels and whatever might be going on with him. This is Kirby from Wednesday saying JT is going out each day working. Now listen to this. This sentence matters, especially in light of what we didn't hear Smart say on Tuesday. He says, I think his mobility is getting better as time goes through, and he's moving around. He's taking a lot of reps and growing, and he's competing just like Dwan is and just like Carson is. That's Kirby Smart from a story at DogNation.com from the SEC coaches teleconference on Wednesday. Can I just see this, the quote back on the screen again one more time, if you don't mind, though? Because the sentence that jumps out and should jump out at you is, I think his mobility is getting better as time goes through, meaning it's still a work in progress, and it's still something that Daniels is dealing with. For me, for now, this should stand as the final word on what's going on with JT Daniels. And when you couple that with what Smart also said on Tuesday, I think that it's obvious that the clear picture has fully emerged here. JT Daniels is just not yet a healthy quarterback for Georgia. It doesn't mean he couldn't be healthy at some point in time before the season is done, but he is not fully healthy now. And on the basis of what Smart said on Tuesday, I would extrapolate even further to say that the health that limits him from being a potential full goal for games has also likely limited him some at practice too, which has hurt his development in terms of being ready if his number were called on there at Georgia. Once again, that doesn't mean that we'll never see him playing quarterback at Georgia or never see him playing this season, but I do think it's fairly obvious why he hasn't been playing up until now. I don't think that JT Daniels has ever been healthy at Georgia. That's one of the reasons why I think, some of you have been frustrated with me here this week, because I've defended Stetson Bennett more than you want, but I think that my response to all of that is, in light of a couple of quarterbacks who've never played before, and Carson Beck and Dwan Mathis, in light of a quarterback, JT Daniels, who we have every reason to believe is still just not quite ready to get out there and go as hard as you would need a quarterback to go, then what should I do in response to that? To try to enjoy what Georgia at least does have at quarterback and appreciate the wins that it might be able to collect on the way towards a potential rematch for Alabama and then worrying about that then. That's just the choice that I've chosen to make, that even if JT Daniels is the only potential quarterback to beat Alabama, if he's not healthy right now, then I want the quarterback that can beat Kentucky, and I want the quarterback that can beat Florida potentially, and I want the quarterback that can win some of these other games there as well. And I would advise Georgia fans to kind of approach that from the same way, as I've kind of repeated over and over, to use the line that Rick Pitino once made famous. It doesn't appear right now JT Daniels is about to walk through that door. Mobility issues that Smart mentions on Wednesday, maybe a delayed progress in his development that Smart alluded to on Tuesday. I think for now, all we can do is take Smart at his word on those topics. It's Around the Doghouse. It is delivered by our friends at Marco's Pizza, America's most beloved pizza, because it's real, authentic pizza made the Italian way. And one of the things my family loves about Marco's Pizza, or at least the parents in the household love, is the great savings you get when you have Marco's Pizza for dinner or for lunch or anything else. How about a large specialty pizza like the white cheesy and a large two-topping pizza for just $23.99? You can order for delivery or carry out the Marco's app or marcos.com. Great, great savings on all that. On those large specialty pizzas, really, really good stuff. They got all kinds of choices. They got, you know, the meats pizza, the white cheesy, all kinds of really cool specialty pizzas. Check all those out online when you go to marcos.com as they deliver Around the Doghouse to us here today. All right, before we're done, we'll hear from Kirby Smart on the other side of the ball, what lingering concerns he might have with the Georgia defense. We will do that. But for now, on everything about where Georgia was last Saturday, where it's looking to go the rest of the way, let's talk to former Georgia wide receiver Terrence Edwards.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will say hello to Terrence Edwards. He did a great job this past Saturday night for us, late as it was, on our Dog Nation postgame show presented by the UGA Bookstore. And, of course, he'll do a great job with us here right now on Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharp. And, Terrence, I want to do two things here with you for a little bit. I want to kind of figure out what went wrong against Alabama, but also see if we can strike a hopeful tone about what might get better as the season moves on next Saturday. Let me begin with the quarterback part of all of this. And obviously, as a wide receiver, quarterback is important to you. You were a great receiver there at Georgia. What do you make of the current quarterback situation with the Dogs? What Bennett did and didn't do against Alabama on Saturday, the cries for maybe somebody else to get a look and get some snaps, including JT Daniels, who we just discussed. Open-ended, I'd like for you to just take this wherever you want to go with it. What do you make of the quarterback situation right now?
First and foremost, I want to, you know, take it to JT Daniels. And me, honestly, I don't have any inside information. I just don't think he's ready to play yet. He was a five-star quarterback coming out of high school for a reason. So that means he has a lot of ability. So if we haven't gave him an opportunity yet in any of these games, I just personally doesn't feel that he's ready to play, or the coaching staff doesn't feel he's ready to play at the level we think he can play it. And for Sexton, going back and looking, I think he missed a lot on Saturday. I think there was a lot of opportunities that he didn't capitalize on at the quarterback position. I think he locked on a few receivers where he didn't let the progression play out. He had some open receiver. I think Kyle Monken did a great job calling the game. I just think in the second half, I wish we could have continued to run the ball, because in the first half, we stayed in third and short, and you can capitalize because the playbook is open for every play once you're in third and long. We stayed in third and short in the first half and third and long in the second half, and that's just not going to play to our strength. So I don't think Sexton played his best game, but for someone who started his third game in the SEC, and I think he played as well as he could play, and it's a learning situation for him. He's going to go back, and I think he's a student of the game. He's going to go back and look at his mistakes and fix it, and we got Kentucky in 2 weeks and Florida after that.
So let me ask you this about Daniels and his health situation. If we assume right now, and I think you're accurate to say it this way, that he's just not healthy enough to be a real threat to be Georgia's starting quarterback right now, that would lead me to believe that he's also maybe limited in practice somewhat too, even though Smart says he's still taking reps and taking snaps, that if you're not healthy enough to play, you're not healthy enough to practice at the same level that you would if you were fully healthy. Do you think his injury, in other words, is also hampering his development a little bit here too, potentially anyway?
It could have. I don't know if he's able to get as many reps as he would like because of his injury. We just don't know. We don't know. They haven't said a lot about J.K. Daniels' injury. But if he's not ready to play, we got to put the best quarterback out on the field. If Kirby and staff feel that's Stetson, and that's who they're going to go with, they feel Juwan is that guy, then he should play. But me personally, I think we should be able to use Juwan in a situation to where we use his legs a little bit, get the run-pass game going. Just give the defense another option to prepare for once we have in the game. I mean, the game is really going to having a quarterback who can really move and get out of the pocket. And that's why I really hate that Jamie Newman opted out this season. So I think his legs was just as important as his arm.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And before we move off this topic, I do want to just accentuate what you just said, that if JT Daniels is not going to be a factor right now, if he's not healthy enough to do that, then it sounds like you'd like to see, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, I want you to say this for yourself, but it sounds like you'd like to see maybe a little bit more of an opportunity for Dwan Mathis. Am I hearing you correct on that?
Yes, I think so. I just think just being able to use his ability to run the football as well, just a change of pace, just give the defense another reason to prepare for them. I mean, you run defense coordinators crazy once you got to prepare for two different quarterbacks and two different styles. So I would like to see Dwan Mathis be able to get in the game and use his legs a little bit. Along me, he can throw the ball, and he didn't look the best after he got hit in that Arkansas game.
Yeah.
I liked his first drive, and he looked differently after he got hit. So I just think we know he's a quarterback that's very different from Stetson, and we should use his ability to make plays with his legs and arms if it's a series or two. But I think we should use him at some point.
What would you take away from the Alabama game beyond all of this? I mean, it's obviously a day in which Georgia fans have, you know, it's been, you know, such a negative conversation after the game with good reason. Georgia played, you know, awful in the second half for sure. But did you see any positives you could take from that game at all, Terrence?
I did. I think, you know, we ran the ball very well in the game. So that's one thing that you could take away, that the offensive line played well, the running back, and I guess the Miller White, his kudos today because I was part of him the week before. He ran the ball very well, and Kendon Milton came in, and I've been preaching James Cook for the longest, and he came in and brought an extra boost to the running game. So if you take away that, we was able to move the ball on Alabama. We was able to score 24 points in the first half. We just got to play two good halves of football.
Let me do two wide receiver things related to this. On the one hand, and it's obviously foolish for me to, you know, give my opinion about wide receivers to you. You know that position's much better than I do. But on the one hand, to me, I think that Georgia is a deeper, more explosive crop of receivers this year than it was a year ago. I think that, you know, Pickens clearly provides that still. Kyaris Jackson had an amazing run leading up to the Alabama game. I thought Jermaine Burton had some moments in the game against the Crimson Tide. Now, there's also a couple, you know, catches maybe he should have made. I won't deny that, but he's clearly proving himself to be kind of a go-to weapon there. That's a potential trio that I'm not quite so sure that Georgia had that same level of receiver play a year ago, even when Lawrence Cager was healthy, and obviously Cager was a very good receiver for Georgia when he was healthy. I kind of take this as a wide receiver group, as maligned as they were a year ago, that is on its way to getting better as this season progresses. And I took some of that from the game against Alabama on Saturday. Do you think that's too rosy of an assessment?
I don't think so. I think the receivers played well. Jermaine, you know, I think those two passes that he let get away, I think he's special enough that he can make both of those catches, especially the one in the end zone. He has to make those. I think George has to be more in the passing game. I mean, he's too talented. He has to get 8 to 10 targets a game, whatever that may be, screens, moving him around. He's too talented of a player not to get those targets a game. And Pierre, you know, has been a real bright spot for this season, especially in the receiving corps. So as long as he continues to progress and the passing game continues to progress along with the run game, you know, offense can move the ball, especially with the defense that we have. Yes, the defensive-wise, I think we gave up a lot of yards, but without those interceptions in the second half, we wasn't giving up many points.
Mm-hmm.
So they can have all the yards they want, but if we're not allowing points, those yards don't matter. I just think the interceptions hamper our defense. And we just got to go back to the drawing board now, yeah, as the old saying, and they got to fix the things that are fixable, and that's what this staff will do.
So let me ask you one more thing about Karis before we move off of this topic. Obviously, he was taken away by Alabama. It seemed to be a great defensive game plan to limit the opportunities he had on Saturday. How do you think that was the Crimson Tide was able to do that, and why do you think it was that maybe Georgia didn't have a better response once a guy who had gone over 100 yards receiving the last two games and had a total of 300 yards receiving in the first three games was limited to fewer than 30 on Saturday? You know, how was it you think that Georgia wasn't able to respond to what seemed to be a key attempt at taking Jackson out of the Georgia game plan?
From my standpoint, from what I saw, I didn't think Alabama blitzed a lot. So they were going to play coverage, keep everything in front of them. As you can see, they was going to use a four-man line to get pressure on. And when they couldn't get pressure, they was taught all week just to get your hands up in the throwing lane because he's a shorter quarterback and they can knock down balls. So the explosive plays wasn't going to be there because they were going to drop seven into coverage, and we're going to rush four and try to get there with the D-line. If we can't get there, we're going to get our hands up. So that's one thing I think that limits the big play for the Dawgs, because Alabama played a lot of coverage and just rushed on his four.
It's Terrence Edwards here as part of the Dog Nation, our Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp. You can also check him each and every week on the Dog Nation post-game show, of course, presented by the UGA Bookstore. No post-game show here this weekend, but we'll look forward to being back at that again in 2 weeks, and look forward to being back at the UGA Bookstore again very soon there as well. And by the way, speaking of the UGA Bookstore, getting decked out for all your apparel needs, the UGA Bookstore provides a great chance for you to be able to do that. And the good news is, even though you can't shop there 7 days a week when you're in Athens, you don't have to be in Athens to get the best of the UGA Bookstore. You can shop online anytime, UGABookstore.com. Check out all the apparel, whether it be the coach's gear from Nike, the 47 brand, Tommy Bahama, Vineyard Vines, Peter Millar, the only place you can get the UGA 10 line from Peter Millar. UGA Bookstore, the great place to go for all that, UGABookstore.com. All right, Terrence, let's finish up with this topic here for a moment. As I mentioned, it's an off week for Georgia on Saturday, then back at it against Kentucky after that. I think the schedule still sets up okay for UGA, even with Stetson Bennett coming off a shaky game. If we assume that he's going to remain the quarterback for Georgia, I view every game on the schedule, including Florida, as still very winnable for the Dawgs, but it would seem like the off week needs to be used properly. As someone who has played before and kind of experienced the grind of a season, how will these players use the off week? What do the coaches want out of that? And kind of how do they now set themselves up for a run of eventually six straight games against SEC opponents to close out the season?
Most bye weeks, you try to self-correct. So they're just going to go and make a lot of corrections, make a lot of teaching. There's a lot of teaching going on during the bye week. So it has nothing to do with their opponent in Kentucky. But this week, it's all about improving. That's coaching and players. So they're going to use this week to go over a lot of the miscommunication that we had in the secondary. May have some miscommunications in the front seven. So you're just going to go back and you're going to self-correct the problems that's been glaring throughout these first few weeks of the season.
So we will look and see how that goes. Do you agree with me that, and I'll let you go after this, but do you agree with me that it still sets up okay for Georgia? You know, obviously, you know, assuming Florida ever starts playing football again, they've dealt with coronavirus issues, but you know, I think it still sets up for Georgia well in that game. I'm not as worried about Kentucky now that Georgia has a week off to get ready for what's a pretty physical team, that I still am pretty optimistic about the rest of the regular season, and I guess I'll hold my opinion about what might happen in Alabama rematch, but I haven't soured on what Georgia's going to be able to do the rest of this regular season. Are you of the same mind on that right now?
I think so. Their goals are still intact. If they go and play Georgia football, and we play two good halves of football, there would go into the SEC championship game, one loss, and that would put them there in the SEC championship game and probably a rematch with Bama. So their goal to win the East first is still there, and their second goal is to win the SEC to get an opportunity to play in the playoffs. It's still there. It's still reachable. So nothing has changed. They're still just going to go out and continue to play as well as they can, try to reach the goals that they set at the beginning of the season.
Great stuff, Terrence. I appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp today. Hope you enjoy Saturday off coming up this weekend, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again very soon there as well.
Thanks.
All right, good stuff there from Terrence Edwards, former Georgia wide receiver, and You know, obviously, I think that Edwards' words there carry a lot of weight because he is a former player. He caught a bunch of touchdown passes from quarterbacks. Therefore, he's able to evaluate these quarterbacks. And I hope that people appreciate the fact that even though I've got one perspective, one point of view, I'm a little skeptical of the idea that if JT Daniels isn't going to be healthy, that one of the lesser experienced quarterbacks like Dwan Mathis or Carson Beck is going to be able to step in and provide something that Stetson Bennett is not. I'll admit that. I've been trying to be as clear about my opinion on that as I possibly can be. But I also don't want Dog Nation Daily to be an echo chamber either, where it's constantly my opinion with no other voices allowed to be a part of it. I reference what people tweet at me. I reference what people comment on, and I bring on guests that I hope will have a slightly different perspective. And Terrence Edwards is an example of that right there. And, you know, ultimately we'll just have to see where all of this goes. But I guess to the extent that I could provide, you know, some level of advice, my advice would be this. Don't let the looming Alabama rematch cloud you from being able to enjoy what's going to happen up until that time. Because, as I said on Monday's show, and I feel pretty confident that I'm right about this, that the formula for beating Alabama is a little bit different than the formula for beating every team on the way to potentially rematching against Alabama. And ultimately, you've got to be the kind of team that can do both, right? You've got to be explosive enough to pull a slight upset against Alabama, but also consistent enough to handle the SEC grind that leads up to that. We know Georgia's got the consistency. Can lean on its defense, can lean on its running game, good on both lines of scrimmage, I guess is the proper tense there. It can do all of that, and it'll probably be in good shape. And then come December, let's see then if the dominoes fall in the right way. Let's see then if JT Daniels is healthy enough to be a consideration. If Stetson Bennett has improved over the course of the year, Mac Jones has clearly gotten better for Alabama. It's at least a possibility for Bennett in Georgia. And let's see then if Georgia's found a way to get some more experience in games for some other quarterbacks on the roster. There's still a lot of football left, and hopefully for Dog fans, plenty of football to enjoy.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, good stuff there from Terrence Edwards. We appreciate him being a part of the program. Let me also give a shout out to go to DogNation.com right now. This is really, really important. When it comes to the Kroger Ultimate Fan Contest, they're at DogNation.com. Someone's going to win a $500 gift card courtesy of Kroger, and the time for submissions is running out here. It's getting very, I think it's like the end of the week is when all of this wraps up. Your chance to kind of get in there and do that and have a potential of winning a $500 gift card. Now, also, a bunch of people are going to win a lot of these Kroger-branded Dog Nation masks. I think we're going to give away 50 of these. We wanted to make some cool masks that kind of look back on some of the great moments in Dog Nation history, and that's obviously a thing that you can be drawn to win as well. But the big, big prize is the $500 gift card at Kroger. So please go to DogNation.com. You can register for your chance to win the Kroger Ultimate Fan Contest and demonstrate why you should be considered Dog Nation's Ultimate Fan. DogNation.com for more details on that. But time is running out for you to get involved. All right, there is a very juicy rumor in the SEC right now, and this comes from Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio. We talked to you earlier this week about Jimmy Brumbaugh. He was a pretty decorated assistant coach. He'd been with Mel Tucker, Colorado, had worked as a defensive line coach in Kentucky and had pretty good success, was just getting his career started at Tennessee, but he was fired. And Jeremy Pruitt said, hey, when it's not a good fit, you got to move on. Well, what Matt Jones from Kentucky Sports Radio was reporting is that Brumbaugh was actually fired during the game against Kentucky on Saturday. Now, this takes me back to when Jeremy Pruitt was first hired. I remember all the controversy of were the Vols going to hire Greg Schiano, and then they looked at this laundry list of guys. They finally settled on Jeremy Pruitt. And I think what we said on the show at the time was that Pruitt has a way of being better than anybody else they considered, because we know that Pruitt can recruit. I think we knew that Pruitt could coach, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And for the most part, Tennessee has been good defensively with Pruitt as its coach. But at the time, we said there are going to be questions about demeanor. Does Jeremy Pruitt have the demeanor to be a head coach in the SEC? There were all of these, and I'll call them rumors, but really they're not even rumors. They've been essentially validated over and over again about blow-ups with other Georgia staffers while Pruitt was defensive coordinator here at UGA. Conduct truly unbecoming of a professional, someone who wants to lead a nearly billion-dollar organization, like an SEC football program, you just can't have somebody who's that hot-headed. And I would suggest that firing Brumbaugh the way it was handled, allegedly in a game, I don't know if that's true or not, but certainly 4 games into a career, I think it brings back questions about the Pruitt demeanor of, are you sure you're professional enough at this stage of your career to lead an organization like this? Now, I have no idea what was going on behind the scenes with he and Brumbaugh, and I won't pretend to know, and I will obviously acknowledge that there is potentially some unknown behind-the-scenes circumstances that could have made firing Brumbaugh, I guess, more easily explained. But for Vols fans, and I've been on message boards to see this, certainly they're not treating this as, well, finally what needed to be done got done. They're obviously looking at the offensive side of the ball and problems at quarterback and things like that. It's almost laughable to many Tennessee fans that the response, the way that Tennessee's played over the last couple of weeks, is to fire the defensive line coach. They just don't see a lot of on-field evidence that backed all of this up. And if it was ever proven true that he was fired during the game, once again, that just kind of feels like sort of a hot-headed thing that Jeremy Pruitt would do that a more experienced coach might not do, especially when you consider how expensive it is now to buy out a guy that you just hired. So, fair or not, this brings back to mind for me some of those demeanor questions that Pruitt once had to deal with. The COVID issues continue at Florida. It has now been reported and, you know, basically known that Florida will not be able to be back in its football facility again until at least Monday. And obviously that's important for the game that it's going to play against Missouri next Saturday. And I think it's been acknowledged by Dan Mullen that they don't expect to have the full complement of scholarship players for the game against Missouri, but they still want to try to play. You know, it's hard to understand how this many people have tested positive. That's a contagious disease, and we know that it spreads. But, man, to have a total of 30-plus people connected to the program who've tested positive, I think it's 26 of them who are players. I may be slightly off my numbers there, but it's a huge number all the way around. You just kind of wonder, how do we get to this point? And, you know, all of a sudden the rest of the SEC, Georgia fans included, kind of know what it feels like to be a Florida fan now, sitting around hoping that Dan Mullen can get his act together from a leadership standpoint. That's a familiar feeling for Florida fans. Now the rest of the SEC's forced to deal with this there as well. The entire league, Georgia included, has just kind of reconfigured its schedule to accommodate Florida's COVID breakout as it is. You know, Georgia getting its off week now as opposed to when it was supposed to be the week before the Florida game. And it's not even a given necessarily that Florida's actually going to be able to play the game against Missouri next Saturday. I'm guessing they probably do, but not even getting on the practice field to Monday. Let me just say this now, and I'm going to plant my flag on this now. 2 weeks from now, or I guess it's 2.5 weeks from now, when Georgia plays Florida, and I think that Georgia's going to win that game again, I don't want to hear coronavirus as an excuse. I don't want to hear that. So Florida fans who are going to try to explain all this away, you know, when Georgia loses to Florida again, well, Dan Mullen's still the better coach. He would have just won the game had it not been for coronavirus and things like that. I'm sorry, in the year of 2020, part of the job of a coach is to prevent 26 people from getting the disease. Somehow, some way, I feel like you got to do a little bit better managerial job than that from preventing that to happen. So when this goes down, when Georgia beats Florida again, and with Stetson Bennett quarterback or really probably anybody else, I think Georgia probably would still win that game. When it does, we are calling it now. Coronavirus will not be an acceptable excuse. Florida needs to get its act together, get back in the practice field. Obviously, we continue to pray that guys, you know, don't get sick, and so thus far that seems to be the case. But in terms of the on-field stuff on all of this, it is really a little bit of a mess there in Gainesville right now. Also, I'll mention this here really quickly. Actually, a couple more things. A former big-time defensive line signee to Alabama, Ishmael Sopcher. It was from Amite, Louisiana, a place that Alabama had once recruited actually pretty well. It's a very, very deep part of the SEC footprint for recruits. Sopcher has not played as much as he wanted to at Alabama, so he has put his name in the transfer portal. So at one point in time, a very big name is in terms of a defensive line recruiting prospect, former four-star recruit, went to Alabama but doesn't seem happy there. Looks like Sopcher's going to go back on the market. And by the way, speaking of Louisiana, the place where Sopcher originally hails, the SEC program that hails from the Sportsman's Paradise, also in the news here as well. The Odell Beckham stuff has come back up. LSU now imposing some violations on itself in relation to Beckham passing out that money after the national championship game a couple of years ago. They're going to reduce, I think it's 8 scholarships they're going to reduce themselves on and sort of hope that's enough. But it has been a very, very weird ride for LSU since it won the national championship, both in terms of some just some weird opt-outs and now the self-imposed violations coming off the Odell Beckham thing. Beckham is now also barred from contact with the program for a period of time here too. So I think most of us just kind of laughed at the Beckham thing. We didn't think it was that big of a deal, but from an institutional standpoint, probably a little bit embarrassing for LSU. And now they're imposing some violations because of that as a way of keeping the NCAA at bay and not getting too involved. And by the way, don't forget, the NCAA is also neck deep in the basketball situation there involving Will Wade. So football trying to build a firewall in between itself and the basketball program because Wade is a little bit of a mess there for the LSU basketball program. So I guess that's a story worth continuing to follow. We'll make that your SEC through. I'm going to let you hear from Kirby Smart here in a moment on the subject of the Georgia defense. Before that, though, let me remind you, if you're settling in for some football here this weekend, or really any sports this weekend, or just enjoying some beautiful fall weather. I think it's supposed to be great weather. Let me encourage you to enjoy some Classic City Lager as well. It's from Creature Comforts Brewing Company. It's an Athens original, and it's just good cold beer, right? It's a lager-style beer, which means it's easy to drink, but there's no sacrifice on flavor. Really, really bold, crisp flavor. Just well done, well-crafted from our friends at Creature Comforts Brewing Company. If you haven't tried some Classic City Lager, you can try it. When you're in Athens, just stop by and see me at the snow tire facility there right in downtown Athens. Or one of the great things you can also do as well is, and this is probably the best way to get it, whatever retailer you go to, Classic City Lager is available in 6 and 12-pack cans. So enjoy yourself some Classic City Lager from our friends at Creature Comforts Brewing Company. All right, we have talked a lot about the Georgia offense and the quarterback situation this week on Dog Nation Daily presented by Merriweather and Tharp, but there are also some issues for the Georgia defense to address as well, after it was, let's be honest, kind of torched by the Alabama offense going back to Saturday. Kirby Smart took some of those issues head on about what could be done differently when you face a high-powered Alabama offense. I thought this was interesting from Smart. Take a listen to this.
There's definitely things we could do better schematically, defensively, to help our players. And when we execute pretty well, we do pretty well. We probably lost more 50-50 balls, what I call 50-50 balls, and it's not just fades and touchdown passes, it's situational third down where can we get a ball out. We probably lost more of those than we have in a long time. You know, even going back to the LSU game, we didn't have as tight a coverage on them as we did in Alabama. We had tight coverage a lot of times in Alabama and just didn't get the ball out. And you got to give them credit for that. It doesn't cause alarm for me because I know that we got good players and we got kids that care and it bothers them. And we got to do a really good job as coaches, try to help them other ways.
I just think for so many fans, you know, the situation on Saturday was a little bit demoralizing for some Georgia fans, you know, just in the fact that you see a Georgia defense that's going to just shut down and demolish most of the opponents that it plays, but another instance against an elite offense where the elite offense just sort of has the edge. That just seems to be the nature of the beast in college football right now. Whether it was Alabama on Saturday, LSU in 2019, you know, the Alabama offense a little bit in 2018, they scored 35 points on you. And then, of course, think about Rose Bowl and Auburn in 2017, another instance where good offenses found a way to move the football against at least back then a very good defense. In Georgia's case now, a great defense possibly, but the great offense just sort of still seems to have the edge. It doesn't mean there's nothing a Georgia defense can do in those games. And I think it's probably true that the Alabama coaches found a way to exploit some opportunities that the Georgia defensive coaches didn't quite have the counterpunch for. But this is a sport right now where offense seems to have the edge over defense. Gator Hater Updater, speaking of having an edge, Dogs have the edge there. It's been 1,454 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten Georgia. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Merriweather and Tharp.